welcome to The Other Room. My name is Oreoluwa Leshi, or Ore as my friends and family call me. The Other Room is a podcast that features conversations with exceptional African women who are defining and redefining their roles in life. These are women who are charting their work and life journeys with purpose. We will look at their career trajectory, the challenges they might have had along the way, and the things they have learned on the path to where they are now. My work focuses on equipping girls and young women with the skills and confidence to prepare for fulfilling careers in science, technology, engineering, and maths. I do this through a non-profit organization called the Women's Technology Empowerment Center, WTEC, which I founded and is based in Lagos, Nigeria. I hope that my guest stories will help reaffirm that you are where you are meant to be, and if not, will encourage you to make important decisions about your next steps. Our guest today is Yetunde Pinero. Yetunde is an experienced senior and chartered procurement and supply professional. She's currently a senior global manager with supply management in Sodexo, an international organization with their headquarters in France. She has a varied career spanning over 21 years and has worked as an architect, a banker, and is currently a procurement specialist across the financial, architectural, and facilities management services industry. She holds a bachelor's degree in architecture and a master's degree in environmental sciences. She also has an MBA. Yetunde also happens to be my best friend, and I've known her since primary school. Hi, Yetunde.
Hi.
All right. I'm so glad to have you on.
I'm very happy to be on and with you today.
Thank you so much. And I feel very honored to have you as my first guest. And I feel it's very fitting that for my first episode of my first podcast, you're my first guest.
Yes. And I had already said I'm quite honored myself. I appreciated that you thought of me first.
All right, great. So this podcast is about women defining and redefining their roles in life, mm-hmm. whether that's to do with work or family or just their lives in general anyway. We're going to be talking to women who are doing different things anyway and basically charting their own course. And so I wanted to have you on because, of course, not just because, you know, you're my best friend, you know, but because you are an incredibly accomplished woman who has done so much, and you're also very and determined. I think virtually everything that you've set your mind to, you have achieved. And that is just incredible. It always blows me away.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
For a second, I thought you were describing someone else. But yeah. I suppose the one thing I can pick on is, I think I have been blessed in that I've had a variety of things I've done over the last sort of 20 plus years of my career. So, yes, I'm happy to talk about that. And
Okay, so I think we'll just start from the very beginning. So can you tell us a bit about your childhood? What kind of girl were you? What kind of interests and hobbies did you have? What did you like? What didn't you like?
Right. So I think one word I can probably use is happy. I definitely, and that sounds, you know, but I did have a happy childhood. When I think back now, maybe because as a grown up, I think pretty much I had what I needed as a young child, as a young girl. I was studious, maybe a little too serious at times, but I think it came with the territory. I am a firstborn girl, child, and I believe a lot was expected from me. I definitely love to read. I love listening to music. I still do. So talking about my likes and dislikes, I think from the very start, I think one of the things I like or things I like would be honesty and simplicity. So I try always to live by those values. I And I guess it goes without saying, I dislike dishonesty and I dislike disorder and untidiness, I think, in terms of, I mean, and that can be both in terms of character and in terms of behavior, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, that does. That totally does. So, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do with your life? Like maybe what kind of job you wanted to do in the future, or yeah, just an idea of how your life as an adult would be.
So thinking about it at the start as a young child, did I know what kind of life I wanted? Not really. I think I just knew from the start that whatever I was going to do, I was going to do my hardest at that. So and I wanted to be happy doing the things I loved. So at a point, I think probably closer to the end of my primary school year, so maybe in year six, I think the conversation came up for me around what did I want to do. So you probably think to yourself, why is this young girl, maybe 10 years old, thinking about what next? I kind of was getting bored with primary school and I just thought, what next? And I asked my mother, what are the sort of careers out there? And she started to name stuff and she named architecture. And I said, stop, what's that? Because I didn't really know what that was. And so she explained it to me, and I said, yeah, that's what I was going to be. So I think that at that point was probably when I started to talk about and think about, oh, I want to read architecture.
Okay, that's amazing. It's quite unusual that you got an idea quite young and you actually stuck with it all the way till you got to secondary school and then you made a decision to do that. I was going to ask you how your life plans morphed by the time you were in GSS3 and SS1 when we had to start picking our subjects, but it sounds like you already knew what you wanted to do.
All right. So let me tell you what's quite interesting about that. So I did, but I did question that decision around about my third or fourth year in senior school. So at that point, at the point in time when it came to choosing subjects, I then asked myself, is this really what I wanted to do? What does it entail? And at the time, and I think that's still the case today, you spend more years in uni than the average. So there was that question of, did I want to spend that time studying that particular subject? Would I really love it? Would I be able to sort of get past the challenges that come with it? And I think I decided for sure that it would be something that I was going to do. So I stuck with it. And also, for me, it made sense because it wasn't a clear, when someone goes, I want to be a doctor, that's your calling. It wasn't that sort of clearness. And if you went with subjects, if you said, all right, what are the subjects I'm great at? It was a problem also because I was pretty good at all subjects, and architecture
Yeah, I
turned out to
remember.
be architecture turned out to be a subject that was both a science and an art. So it kind of felt like the right choice anyways. So I stuck with it.
That's really good. So by the time you had to pick your subjects, they were all subjects that you were good at anyway. So that wasn't a problem for you.
No.
So did you have an idea about who architects were? Like, did you know any architects when you were growing up? Were they, and if you did, did you have a certain image that came with it? So for instance, I remember when I was young and I told my mom that or maybe I wanted to be a nurse or a doctor. And then I was looking in books. And then in all the books, the nurses were always women and then the doctors were always men. Did you have any ideas about, what kind of person an architect was?
All right, I think that's a good question because I think I'm ashamed to say that I didn't know any architect at the
But that's brave. You did it, and when you decided that I'm going to do this anyway, I'm going to commit like what 7 years of my life to this.
that helped. Maybe if I'd known some architect, I might have changed my mind.
It's possible. Okay, so you didn't, but did you do a lot of reading about architecture? Like, go, well, we didn't have the internet back then, but how would
No.
you have even gotten more information about architecture? Like, go to the library or
Do you know
what
what?
would
All I knew was they design buildings. That was pretty the simplest way to describe it. Yes, I knew that, you know, they'll go to site, and I knew often most architects were men, and pretty, you know, very few were women at the time. I remember when I mentioned to one of my aunts at the time I wanted to study architecture, she's like, "Are you sure you really want to do it? You know, it's not really girls that do it." And that, I guess, that didn't scare me. Like I said, I just, in my mind, it was like, I'm going to create something. I'm going to create something, and I can be of relevance, and I'd have buildings, and people would go, "Yeah, she designed that." And that was it. So yeah, I didn't think. Now I'm still trying to think back. Did I know, and do I still know any architects that were probably friends to my parents? And I can't. I don't think so.
Well,
No.
okay, so I think that's really brave. That's very courageous, and you showed a lot of foresight in doing that. So since you didn't know any architects, were there any adults in your life who you kind of looked up to, like you liked their lifestyle, maybe you liked the idea of the work that they did, and just thought, ah, I want my life to be like this person's life?
I think at the time I probably did. Probably up until my last year in secondary school, I just looked at, I think it was just a, you know, a few women I thought I kind of liked how they've, you know, built up their homes, and, you know, how they go out to work. But then subsequently after secondary school, I don't think I really had anyone else. I think I up until now, I admire different people. And but then, you know, it's like learning from, because the truth of it is, I don't know that anyone is perfect, and I'm not perfect. But what I try to do is, if I see anything that I like, I try to sort of emulate that as best and make it my own way. So yes, at the start, as a young child, you probably look at up at some aunts and uncles, and you think, I like the way they've sort of grown their life and business over the years, and I kind of want to do the same. So yeah.
Okay, so you mentioned, about looking up to some people, in terms of how they kind of set up their homes. So at that time, were you already thinking, about, or were you aware of, I don't know, any gender, differences, gender stereotyping? So for instance, when I was in primary school, and I guess, like most girls anyway of our generation, and probably even now, as a girl, a Nigerian girl, you're expected to cook, to clean, to do things around the house, to be, quote unquote, domestic, while boys are, asked to clean the wash the cars, and outdoor things. And I remember that, I used to find it frustrating that, my mom would come back from work and, drag me to the kitchen with her while my brother could keep watching TV. Were you already aware of things like that? I mean, did that happen for you, or it wasn't something that you really thought about?
Absolutely. I mean, is there any way to escape that? So you are absolutely right. Those sort of things happened to me also. So my sister and I kept getting dragged into the kitchen a lot, a lot. Not my brothers. In fact, I remember one of my brothers once came back from boarding school and said he wanted to try and cook some, meals, that he had recipes, and I think he'd taken home, is it home cooking
Home
as a subject,
economics.
home economics, yes, and wanted to cook. I guess what? My mother didn't let him. And I wondered at the time that, is that fair? And what's wrong? Why can't he? Why couldn't he? So yes, there are always certain things like that. But I think in another sense, like the house chores, like, certainly cleaning the bathrooms and hoovering or sweeping or whatever. That was sort of split between us, so there wasn't a gender type to that. So my mother made sure all of us did the, cleaning the house, so, and the bathrooms. It wasn't a case of the girls would do that, but the kitchen one was definitely us. And so you even at an early age, you start to see all of those things that are, oh, it's, this is what women do, this is what men do.
I remember I absolutely hated that, and I would write in my diary that, oh, I really hate doing this. When I have children, I'm not going to make them. You know, they will all do the work equally. They all do. I remember. Oh gosh. Okay. So, all right. So now let's move into university life. So was university life all you expected it to be? I remember you start and you're excited and wide-eyed and, you know, so excited to study architecture and just be out in the big world. So number one, was university what you expected it to be, or what did you even expect university to be?
Right, so as against secondary school, where I was totally disappointed in my secondary school, because as you know, I'd had a vision of Mallory Towers and St. Clair's,
Yes,
and I got that it
Sinclair's.
was, yeah, actually university was fun. I thinking back, probably was one of the best times of my life. So for me, it was like I was a child and also an adult. So guess what? I enjoyed the best of both worlds. And at the time, you know, my particular year, my the cohort I was in, we were a close one. So we would draw at night and play music, and we had a good laugh back then. As regards to the courses itself, it was as I expected it, and maybe even a little bit more, because we had that sort of, rather than being stuck in a room or in a classroom, for a lesson, we could actually go outdoors. So we would go outdoors, and we could draw outdoors. We could, and that made it fun. I think the only thing I sometimes wish I'd had, or we'd had at that time, was the benefit of the digital side of architecture. We learned, and I learned architecture the old school way. So, the T square and all, but aside from that, it was what I thought. I mean, you would see us, walking around with our T squares hanging, in our studio bags, and like I said, it was being able to be an adult, taking, decisions, but then still a child. I could still go back home and ask for money and not worry about paying any house rent, but they would sort things out. Yeah, it was. I think it was fun. That time or period was a fun one.
That's nice. So, how many men, how many women were there in your class, and how big was your class?
So again, I think I was we I and we were quite blessed, because our year was probably the smallest year ever. I mean, as in every year was large, but mine was quite a small one. I don't know how that turned out. As regards to when you might have a year that would be maybe 100, we were probably two-thirds of that, or even slightly less. And we were just six girls. Just six females. So
Okay, so six
that
girls
made
and how many
us,
guys?
oh gosh, probably you could do a 1 to 7, 8 ratio. It was just six of us, and I we you know we were just we were the small six. We knew, it was, I think it was good. It was good that we were small. And that is basically because, how do I put it? Every year was that sort of ratio, but because then again we had a small one, therefore we were not obvious that as well, as obvious as maybe other years, maybe.
So, did you experience any differences in the classroom setting, being a woman as opposed to a guy? Were there any kind of gender differences, or everyone was just, you know, the same and treated everyone the same?
By and large, we treated each other the same. I think there are times that the guys would want to be guys. I think if you're struggling, they want to come and help you. But I think then that didn't matter. It was any which way. So it was pretty much in class, it was fair. I would say there wasn't a case of, oh, I'm a man, therefore, I do better. Or, none of that. I think it was. And I don't know if I can say that. I don't know if that's the case with other years, but my particular, cohort, it was we were basically equals, I think. In there, we were. Yeah. I mean, you couldn't do you, you they you couldn't do my drawings for me. Where's the time? We've got the same time. So,
Sure.
yeah, it was. That's all right.
So it basically came down to, I guess, your own talents and how well you're able to perform on the course and your assignments and
Exactly.
things.
Exactly. It's a tricky one to do because it's your design, and everyone has their style. So you begin to recognize people's styles. So if I then take on someone else's work, it's clear. It will show.
Okay. So even as far back as then, okay, you already had your own architectural style, I guess, so to
Yes,
speak.
everyone has a style. Everyone, you know that you know that is Yetunde's, those are Yetunde's designs and drawings. Oh, that's Buki's designs and drawings. That's Anna's, you would know. We could tell.
Wow. Okay. So you went through, how long was your program? Was it 6 years or was it 7?
Ended up being close to about seven.
Yeah, I thought so. So by the time you graduated, I remember you graduated really well, like top of your class. And then you're out in the big world to get your first job as an architect. And from what I understood, it wasn't very easy getting a job as an architect. Like there are a few spaces for a few positions for architect. Was that true?
Well, okay, so again, I was blessed. I came out with the first class. I think that probably was quite helpful and useful. So my first ever work, I actually got a small job before I started, my first ever job. So my first ever work was for a landscaping design for a church. So one of my aunts approached me, asked me if I could do it. I did it, and I earned my first pay. But my first ever job was at MOE Limited, an architectural firm owned and run by a woman. So, no, I don't think I was ever unlucky as regards to jobs. Now, you asked the question around whether that was easy to get because, of being female. For me, it was not a problem. Maybe there were others who experienced it, but not from my friends. I don't think my friends I knew. So obviously the girls I graduated with remain my friends still today. I still get in touch with them. So I don't think that they had problems with jobs. Some of them might have switched careers along the way, same as myself. But yeah, it's been okay. Really, maybe they did. I couldn't say for others. I'm so sorry.
Okay. So what was it like working as an architect? I can imagine that it was a whole new world. What was it like? Picture like your first day. Was it very demanding? Was a lot expected of you? Or maybe as the new architects, I don't know what they call them, junior architects, maybe you are not given much work to do. What was it like?
Oh no, you have work. You got work. I think first of all, I was so excited. I was so excited. It was great to put my skills, my acquired skills, to practice. It was hard work. So, you had specific projects you would work on, and what I did find, what I would tell you is, I realized early that to actually earn the big bucks would probably mean you owning your firm. I also realized that within, the team who would work in any architectural firm, the top ones usually were the men. And that became quite clear. But as regards to when I first started, it was very exciting. It was so great to be out there and, designing and going to sites and looking at the construction, speaking with the client, all of those were, it was like, oh, I've been looking forward to this like forever.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So when you were out in sight, did you ever have anyone telling you like, oh, this woman, or maybe looking past your shoulder, looking for the real architect?
Oh no, okay, yes, that has definitely happened where they think, and typical Nigerians, there is that madam, you're here, be careful, this, not that. I think I just ignored those. If there were people being quite unsure of things, I kind of just ignored it. I didn't let it. For me, it's irrelevant whether they thought I needed to be there, or it's surprising that, you know, she's the one who's looking after the. It is what it is, and I'm looking after the project, so I kind of won't ignore anything that I thought was negative.
And do you think that maybe the work environments may have been different from other architectural firms because it was run by a woman? I mean, did you work in any other architectural firms that like you can compare like the environment, the culture?
So that's the thing. I only ever worked in one architectural firm, because subsequently I got a job as an architect with a financial institution, a bank. So I moved to that, and I became an in-house architect. Now, when I joined that, that was just, I was the only female. So I could tell you that that became different in there. So in terms of the projects, they tended to want to give me the smaller of projects to handle. That was the initial stage. The second of it was more at the time. I remember the managing director thinking, maybe let's take you away from that a little bit and get you more into the quality side of things, meaning help to put the brand together. So this is how each branch will look like. It's, you know, and that was more, I think he thought, oh, this was more a female sort of thing to do rather than ask the men to do.
Okay, and I assume that also because it was a financial institution, the culture would be totally different from being in an architectural firm itself.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That would definitely be the case. But I can only speak from my experience, yes.
Of course, of course, of course. So, do you feel that you would have like maybe more varied experiences in the architectural firm than in the financial institution? I mean, I guess with the financial institution, you're always sure that you know you're going to be busy because they're always opening new branches. But maybe with the architectural firm, maybe not always.
So I don't know for sure. So the thing is, do people change? Do they change regardless of the environment? Like, it's all about the people, isn't it? So I think, except for when there are exceptions. So for example, the architectural firm I worked at was run by a woman. Okay. And so that had an impact as to how things were done. But in bigger architectural firms where they had men in control and at the top, and it was, you know, a bigger, more established firm, there would be all of that politics and all of that that go with the gender situation, which applies whether it's a financial institution or elsewhere. I think that's another thing that one needs to take into consideration. How big and how hierarchical the organization is.
So then, so you moved from the architectural firm to the financial institution, and then how did your career evolve from there?
Okay, so interesting. So when I got the job as an architect with the bank, it meant practicing architecture, but obviously as an in-house architect. So that for me exposed me also to the financial institution and its workings and all of that. Now, interestingly enough, I then found out that because of that sort of function and not being in the banking sort of sector itself properly in terms of activities and in terms of role, it meant there was no promotion. And I was at the time eager to be promoted, eager to, you know, move ahead in my career and my life. And then I went into proper banking. So I actually had a role in terms of improper banking, in terms of the financial side of things. And then somehow along the lines again, I went into procurement within the banking industry also. So moved into another function where it was about procurement in terms of CapEx and OpEx for the banking industry. And all of those career changes were based on opportunities that arose and I took them at the time, to be perfectly honest, Ore.
Okay, so it wasn't necessarily like you had like a master plan, like, okay, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. But then the opportunities arose and you thought, okay, I think that would be great. I think that would be good for me. I think I should do
this. Yes. And bear in mind, all right, it's not all opportunities, you know, and I've had various opportunities and I still do till today. There are some that you turn down. So you look at it and go, is this going to take me where I want to go? And those, when I took those, my decision at the time was that they were going to take me to where I wanted to go. So I took them. Don't have any regrets, but it's part of the ultimate goal, I suppose. And maybe the ultimate goal was not necessarily at the end of my career, I would still be an architect. It's just what I achieved at the end of my career that was probably my goal.
I was going to ask, so what was your ultimate goal?
Oh, what was my ultimate goal? Good question. Okay, so the thing with it is this. If I said to you was to be successful, it sounds very cliche. But then again, it does. But all right, success means whatever you want it to mean. So it depends on your definition of success. And for me, you know, my definition of success was that whatever happened, I could be independent, one. I could provide for all I needed and I could live within what I have and had. And I would, you know, and with all of this, it would be doing all the things I love to do. So, to be at peace with myself. And so even as regards to my work and what I'd done, even as regards to when I was in the financial institution with the banks, you know, I never went outside of my values. And I did that all so that I could go to bed at night and sleep well. So I just want to be, you know, happy, you know, living the life I want to live with the people I love.
That's really profound. Right now I'm reading the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And one thing it talks about is being clear about what is important to you. And actually sitting down and writing like a mission statement for your life. And that will guide all the decisions that you make because you'll know what aligns with your values, what's going to take you to where you want to go and what's not. So it's, you know, fairly easy to, you know, turn down some offers, you know, and some opportunities. So it sounds like you had either read that book or you were just very ahead of your time back then.
I have read the book. I just don't remember when I read the book. I think I must have read that book a while ago.
Okay, that's good. I can imagine, but how did your parents take it that, oh, you went to university, you studied this degree, you know, this course, you got a degree after like almost 7 years and now you're going to do something else. Did they question that? Because I know back in their time, it was different. You studied something and you usually would practice that, you know, for the rest of your career. So what do your parents have to say about you moving from architecture to banking?
You know what? You've put a question to me that I'd never thought about before. And I suppose that then answers the question for you. My parents never said anything about it. They never, ever questioned it. They never, ever did. They just sort of thought, she knows, okay, all right. And I think I always give them I must have probably explained why to them. I must have said, guess what? I've done this, or I'm doing this, and this is why I'm doing it. And they accepted it.
Wow, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, well, I think you've always kind of know what you wanted to do. So I'm sure that, you know, also played a part in them, you know, having confidence in your decision that, Yetunde always, she's always, always on the ball. So.
Okay, I guess so. Like I said, I've never thought deeply about it. So yeah, that's just raising something I'd never thought about. Yeah, no, I think that means that I had their support. But bear in mind, all right, you know, the thing is, I am an adult. I was an adult at the time when I was making all those decisions. So I am their child, but not a child. And therefore, you know, there's only so much. They can always advise, But like I said, they never said anything anyway. So I guess they must have just been quite confident in me. And I guess I'm very grateful for that.
Because I mean, I think to a lot of parents, especially African and Nigerian parents, you can be 40, 50, 60 years old, but you're still their child. So that's pretty awesome of them, really. So, also you moved to the UK, and then so you had some new experiences, or I think you continued along procurement. So can you tell us more about, what you started to do when you moved to the UK?
Right, so I have stayed within procurement, that's for sure, and I have worked within procurement in a couple of industries. I would say actually two industries. So one of them was a building sort of industry, if you like, if you want to call it that, building and services. The second was financial services again. So I went in, I also went back to the bank and worked with them and was in the financial services industry for a while in procurement, so procuring for them. And then I have now moved back to more my sort of area again, still, well, they're all my areas really. So again, I'm now with a company that basically provides facilities management services, and I'm in procurement with them. So I have stayed within procurement. I've also had to obviously read up, study, and get certification in that line to join the institute here and to get the required. So I have a graduate diploma with them. But yeah, I it's gone according to plan. All the changes have been, like I said, at the time when it was like right to move, and they came up the jobs, and it's been quite interesting because whilst there are certain similarities in the ways we do things all over the world, there are changes where cultures differ, and also my roles have been global roles. So global roles meant I have and I've been dealing with people around the world. So it was also understanding the culture of all the people that I work with around the world, whether it's in the US or in China or in Brazil or in Germany. It's been actually quite an exciting and different sort of world and challenge since I moved.
Okay, so in case we didn't define it earlier, can you say exactly what procurement
Okay, well,
is?
I'll say it in the simplest demand. Believe you me, I like simple. So simple is saying procurement is about purchasing. It's buying really. But then what you buy differs. So you can procure and be in different categories of procurement. So some people will procure IT, some will procure facilities management, some will procure food, as in food and produce. Some will, so there are different things you could be buying for your organization. Now, at the same time, it's also probably overlooking the contracts that you'll put in place with your suppliers. So that is also key to part to it. It's sourcing, it's contracting, it's ensuring the deployment of the category purchase in the right way. It's yeah, that's the way that I like that, simple and short.
Okay, so as part of your work, you have to, it sounds like you have to
Yes,
negotiate
absolutely, all the time.
prices, you have to read and review contracts.
And you
Okay,
agree
so,
prices and and all of that,
okay.
and deploy this contract to the various countries that are within the scope of the agreement.
Okay, so you also have to have, I guess, good skills in terms of follow-up, dealing with people, managing teams,
Finance,
especially when you're dealing with people in different countries, finance, okay,
legal.
and some
Yes,
legal knowledge too.
absolutely, absolutely. And of course, even the business side of things, because it's about understanding the needs of the organization. So what do they want? What are they trying to get? And how can we deliver? And what are the challenges within each country. So challenges differ from country to country. So it's all of those. It's quite simple but complex.
Yeah, it sounds quite involved, actually. Do you think that it's okay? So number one, it's not, I think, one of those obvious career choices, like when you're in school and you say, "Oh, I want to become a lawyer, I want to become a doctor." You know, those are the common ones we know. What would you say, like, "I want to become a procurement officer"? Is that what people within this space are called?
So procurement professionals? Let me tell you, most of the people that I know that in this field right now, when I speak to them, colleagues, you know, who do this, whether in the same organization or elsewhere, no, none of them ever planned it. All of them just got into it by accident or whatever they want to call it. But I think today it's changed. There are people who come out of school and go, "This is what I want to do. I want to buy." And so simple term is someone can tell you, "I want to be a buyer." But there are different titles. So you can be a purchasing officer, you can be a procurement officer, you could be a buyer, you could be a sourcing manager, you could be a sourcing a category manager. It goes on and on. So there are different titles depending on exactly what you're doing within the scope. But you know, you just say to yourself, "I want to go into procurement or purchasing," for those who come out of, you know, school and decide that's what they want to do.
Okay, so on top of all this very busy work schedule, you decided to do an MBA. Why did you decide to do an MBA?
Right, I'd always wanted to go for an MBA. I don't know if you remember, from as far back as 20 years ago, I couldn't afford it then, and I had to wait for the right time. So right time meant financially, family, work. Mm-hmm. So I went for it when I could go for it.
Okay, so what do you feel is added to you, to your ability to do your job well?
Okay, so I think what I know that it's done, it's given me an in-depth understanding of the runnings of a business and key business practices. It has exposed me to other areas of business I've never worked in. So, you know, I've now done financial side, so I kind of get an understanding of financial side of things. But, you know, HR, I've never done HR, and I would never will, I don't think. But, you know, so it explained more about HR, it explained things about marketing, it explained things about sales, you know, accounting, all of those areas within the business, and, you know, all of those things that together make a business run.
Okay, so now that you've done that, do you think that because it's exposed you to different aspects of business, do you see yourself moving maybe out of procurement into something else, or you just see yourself moving upwards? What do you see for yourself?
So you see, the thing with it is, I think that I have the benefit of having worked in various areas and with the MBA also. So what it means is, you know, if you move up, and for me, that's my plan. The higher up you go, that means you can take on wider roles. So let me just give you as an example. If one said, you want to be let's just use the title general manager, because titles differ. So a general manager could be overlooking a number of things. It could be procurement and supply, and then it could be admin. Do you see what I mean? So because you've got the skills from the MBA, you are able to sort of overlook and manage a whole number of areas because of that knowledge you have, or additionally, if you've got the experience of having worked in those areas.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say that about an MBA, that, you know, it can give you those skills, like much broader and deeper skills, such that you can do basically, I think, anything within the business sphere. It gives you a good knowledge of everything put together. I remember an MBA used to be like the degree to have. And then over the last few years, there are some discussions, you know, I think there are a lot of people who feel that, oh, it's not so relevant anymore, that what an MBA really gives you is access to a network of people. But it sounds like the knowledge that you got from it was really,
so
really
important. Let me take a point there. So you're quite right about that network of people. There is no doubt. So for me, my MBA was one that I had My cohort was global also, so I have people from different parts of the world that attended. Guess what? We actually have a WhatsApp group, and we still connect up until tomorrow, even for birthdays, remembering birthdays or checking with each other. So it has given that network. There is no doubt about it. But what I think is, to a certain degree, it is right whether an MBA does give you what you want or not, to a certain degree. So let me explain what I mean by that. So unless one actually rotates and works within different functions within an organization, right? I think there is no easier way within a short time scale to get that all in one understanding of the different wheels that run a business efficiently. Do you see what I mean? So it's what an MBA will do for you. Okay. Do you follow where my trigger?
Yes, I do. Yes. Okay, that's really good. You did your MBA and you were working at the same time. Did you consider taking a break from work to do your MBA? Because the MBA was demanding, your job was demanding. How did you manage to do the two at the same time?
I have no idea. Okay, no. Hang on. No. So let me answer that differently. So, all right, it was not easy at all. I sometimes wonder how I made it. But on a serious note, I think I had fantastic family support. My husband and children were incredibly supportive and forever encouraging me. I tell you, they did that, because I remember, sometimes when I thought to myself, and I would, I would verbally and, say it in the house, I don't know why I went into this. The children were like, come on, you can do it. You started this, you know you can finish it. And so I think what helped was that I had that support. And to be honest, towards the third year, because it was a 3 to 5 year sort of program, so the earliest you could do would be sort of like 2.5, the earliest you could do, and then the longest is 5 years, and I did mine in 3 years. So towards the end, the last sort of year, my third year, I was tired. I just wanted to finish it. I did.
I can imagine. Yeah, I think if things like that, it's usually better if you can finish, as quickly as possible and not let it drag on too long. So it sounds like the support of your family was really important for you in terms of encouraging you when you were not sure that you could do it, and maybe even giving you like the space and time that you needed, for your coursework and all your team projects, meetings and calls. So can you talk a bit more about the role of your family?
Wow, okay. First of all, I see my family as first a modern sort of family. And I'll tell you why I say this. So my husband cooks, which my father does not. So my father does not cook at all. So for me, that is a change. And he has no qualms about doing it. He's happy to do it. He loves doing it. He also loves shopping, so he can shop. It's the fact that we are not restricted to those typical sort of, African context roles where, as a woman, I've got to do this, and as a man, he's got to do this. And, so it's helped us in that way to sort of be a little more fluid and supportive of each other. And secondly, I must say one thing, though. I did have help. So that, therefore, did cut me some slack. And I think it's very wise to recognize the need for a good support network and help, because, I think that is the smart way to go, and it would be too much if one does not recognize the need for some level of help.
Yeah, I think, for a lot of women, because so much is expected of us, we try to do so much without, always asking for help. But I mean, it's true. It's important. If you have help, you have people who can help you, you have a network, it's really important to tap into that. So, yeah. So I wanted to ask, in terms of You've kind of answered this question already anyway. I was looking at in terms of the African family context where, the mother, or rather the wife, and if they have children, has so much that is expected of her, and how they sometimes you may have people around who can help, but you may feel that I shouldn't, I should be able to do all this. Or sometimes you have, people around who make you feel bad, like, okay, so let me give you an example. So for instance, cooking, for instance, cooking is something that I enjoy when I don't have to do it. But when, you have to put food on the table every day for your family to eat, I enjoy it less. But there are people who feel that as a woman, you should do the cooking, you should do everything in the house. And and then there's almost a kind of shaming if you don't do cooking and you say, oh, I've ordered, soup for the house, I've ordered this for the house. So you have a supportive family, but outside of that, do you have any kind of I don't know, comments, sometimes snide
All right,
comments
all right. Let me tell you a little one. Did I
because you have a nice
I'm
husband,
sure I told you. I'll tell you if I have. But remember, I once told you there was, I think it was about two, was it two? No, 3 years ago or 4 years ago. I was taking a walk down my road here, and one of my neighbors, the mother was around. I don't often see the mother, but she was around, and I bumped into her and I said my usual pleasantries, "Hello, nice to meet you." Da, 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 da. And she started talking to me. Now, she and then was asking me questions. So she asked me about work, what I do, da da da, da. And she said that she heard that I go to work full time. Now, the neighbor I referred to, the wife does not work, so she does not work at all. She's always home. And this is the mother of the man, the husband. So she was saying, she then asked me, she said, "So if you're always working and traveling and all that, then how do you feed your, how do you, how are you there for your children?" And when she said that, I'm like, I stood for a second and I said to her, there's nothing that goes on in my children's lives that I do not know about. I'm on top of it. I know when they have, play dates. I know when they have sports days. I know when they've got to do that, who's got music practice on what day, But when I went back into the house, I said to my husband, I said, "Do you know what? The neighbor's mother just tried to shame me just now." And I will not pretend that there are times I feel guilty, that's for sure. There are times I feel guilty. And at that point, so sometimes I try to overcompensate. So I remember maybe this is close to about 10 years ago now. I had to go to work in Brussels and I had been there for I think 3 4 days, long days, meetings and all that. And I took the train back to the UK. Now, my daughter had one of those, it's her turn days to take cakes into class. They do it turn by turn. And it was her turn. And she'd asked me that could she have cakes? And she'd said to me, she wanted us to bake it together. She didn't want me to buy cake. So I came back from this long trip that this trip where I was tired and all that. And I went straight into the kitchen and started making cakes with her so that she could take cakes to school the next day. So the next day on the phone, I was talking to my boss at the time. She is based in Brussels, and we were talking. Then I happened to mention that, oh, when I got back last night, and she was silent on the phone, and she said, "Why are you killing yourself?" was what she said. "Buy cakes. There are cakes in the shops." And I said, "I had promised her." And she said, "Well, don't make those promises. You've got to try. If not, you are going to burn yourself out." So simple and short, Ore, there are times when I feel guilty, that's for sure. But I also know that I do my best as much as I can to be there for them, to provide for them. I try to balance things as best I can. It is not easy. I do sometimes get really, I get fagged out, tired, but I do try. So I on that note, I tr you know, the guilt is lessened.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's most important, that that the intention is there. You try your best, but really, I mean, if you're dead, you're no good to anyone. So it's really important to try and, keep that in perspective. I think which can be really hard to do, but it's really important that we try. Oh, so thank you so much. This has been a really interesting conversation for me yesterday. I don't know how
And
it's
you're
been for
sounding like
you.
you don't know anything about me. I thought you would do all these things.
Yes, well, I know a lot of it, but yes, there are a few things that that are new to me
Okay,
that I'm hearing for the
that's good.
first time. But yeah, I think for the benefit of our podcast guests, it's good to talk about these things
It
and
is.
share
It's
these old
actually
stories
really
again.
nice, and I'm glad for the time, and it's good to think these things through and see, how we've made you through the years, given the fact that, when we started off, we were told girls are girls and boys are boys, and now we are just showing them that basically we can do everything. We can do what girls do and we can do what boys do. So it's irrelevant to all of these things. It's just what you want to do, what you want to achieve, go for it.
Yeah, thank you so much. And so I'm going to say thank you yesterday for your time, for sharing with us. And I am really excited again to have you as my guest. And I look forward to playing back our conversation actually, and then sharing
Great.
it with the
Thank you,
world.
all right. You take care. Bye.
You too,
Bye.
yesterday. Bye. Thank you so much for joining me on the other room in conversation with Yetunde Pinheiro, my best friend. I hope you enjoyed this episode and picked up a few new things along the way. If you did, please subscribe to the other room on your favorite podcast app. Until next time, live your life with boldness and joy. Bye.